Okay, everybody, it's Michael E. Cullen II.
And I'm Sesame Incarta from the All Too Real 2 podcast. We're passionate about movies, TV, and pretty much all things pop culture.
Dive into the chaos of failed sitcoms, direct-to-video sequels, and the quirky realms of cinema and TV.
Join us every Thursday for your dose of All Too Real 2 entertainment.
We'll guide you through debates like whether Howard the Duck qualifies as a superhero.
Ponder if Larry the Cable Guy could be the new Rock or Schwarzenegger.
Discover if some shows and movies should have stayed in the cutting room.
Ever heard of a sitcom featuring that dictator with the funny mustache? Well, we watched it.
We're dedicated to unraveling the peculiarities of pop culture, sometimes with awesome guests.
So, if you're into the eccentric world of pop culture,
listen and subscribe to All Too Real 2.
Available wherever you find podcasts
and on Age of Radio.
Yeah, we were all either high, drunk, or some combination thereof.
He made me feel uncomfortable.
But he eats up every scene he's in.
Just full frontal spawn shots.
That sounds like a lot of therapy.
The violator made me feel weird.
Yeah, you know what? That is a good call.
I pieced together the movie through YouTube.
Hello, and welcome to Movie
Smash!
Hello and welcome to Movie Smash, the show where we dive headfirst into comic book movies outside the MCU. If you're new to the show, thanks for joining us. If you've been here before, you know the drill. Each episode, we're going to smash a movie whose source materials from a graphic novel or a comic. Is it worth revisiting? Should it be forgotten? Let's find out. This is Movie Smash. I'm one of your hosts, Chris Roberts. I'm the founder of Off Panel Creations. With me today, I have Jeremy Parmentier.
Hey, this is Jeremy Parmentier. I've also returned from hell, but a hell of playing bad video games on Retrovaniacs podcast.
And Fergal Mayo.
What's going on, y'all? This is your proprietor of Everything Awesome, Fergal Mayo, Gotham Knight Comics. Staying while my good friend Jeremy has returned from hell, I have returned from heaven with the sword of Michael to avenge. And let's get down and dirty.
And our guest host today is Lewis Peterson.
How you doing, y'all? I am Lewis Peterson. I am a comic book creator and illustrator. I am the creator of Mason and also a new comic book coming out called Survival Girl and Puppy. Come check that out.
Thanks for joining us. And our movie today is 1997 Spawn, starring Michael J. White, John Leguizamo, and Martin Sheen, directed by Mark Dippe? I don't know. It's the only movie ever produced. Dippy.
I'm telling you, it's a Diap. It's Diap. We're all going to be surprised. It's going to be, my name is Mark Diap.
Imagine a substance with the power to destroy humanity. Imagine a creature insane enough to use it. Imagine a hero on the verge of creation. From flesh to steel.
You must visualize your objective.
From blood to blade.
Don't get cocky. You have a lot more to learn.
From man to spawn.
Peek-a-boo. I see you.
So, Lewis, why did you pick this movie?
I've been trying to figure that out, why I picked it, but I feel like it's one of the one movies that's not Marvel, it's not DC, it's not, I don't know, just, I think it was ahead of its time, and it needs some shine here.
So, before you saw this movie, guys, were you familiar with the comic?
Yes, absolutely. I believe anyone that, again, that golden age. But during the time of Ditko and Kirby, there was these golden age artists that made amazing work. That's when we started seeing these guys, and I think we're at that point now. So that's where, yeah, this is a great comic. Great story. Great movie.
My brother was a big Spawn fan. I read a few of the comics, but not a lot. And so I more remembered things like the toys and things that were added to it because, you know, McFarlane, Tom McFarlane, who had kind of been the creator of Spawn, the original artist and everything, had these toys later that were very, very detailed, looked very, very cool, but they were not the most pliable to play with. But when you were a toy collector, and I used to work at a comic and toy store, we had all the McFarlane toys. I remember those more than the comic itself.
I was a big Tom McFarlane fan. I loved them, and Amazing Spider-Man, Adjective Lived Spider-Man, and when he came out with Spawn, it just continued, and the artwork was like the main draw for me. I don't know if I really read the stories back when I first was collecting them, but I loved the artwork. I would copy the artwork, and just It was the best. It was the best thing at the time. I didn't think it was any like anything else at the time when it was coming out. So I had followed him until he stopped drawing Spawn. So I collected everything that he drew.
And see, that's what I'm talking about, right? Like, he reinvented, both of you guys, Lewis and Jeremy, he reinvented so many genres. Again, with, you've got to mention, with giants like Capullo, Snyder, Kirkman, Silvestri, I mean, Liefeld. I mean, these guys reinvented. But McFarlane, from the, both the toy game, it's, when he came as pre, if you just look at toys pre and post McFarlane, you can see the difference, right? They go for much more detail orientation. There really is, and I've got them all behind me, so I got a lot of different ones behind me, and they just, I love the detail. That's probably the best part. You might not get to play with them as much, but that detail just makes them so awesome. You can build on that. And the comics, the art was something else. It was completely, we were not used to that because we're Steranko guys. We're still looking at the 70s, early 80s, and then all of a sudden this art comes out. You're like, what is this?
Yeah, he broke all the rules of perfect everything. Like, he just made it look cool. Didn't have to follow all the rules of perspective, anatomy. It was just like this awesome, awesome page layouts and just wild poses, and it was just awesome to look at.
Yeah, I wasn't familiar with Spawn at all. I could pick him out of lineup, but I had no idea who he was, power sets, anything like that. I just knew he existed. It's about it.
I think you'd be afraid to pick him out of a lineup. Let's be honest. Like, if you were like, okay, who was the guy that robbed you? Is it the guy with the flowing red cape? I honestly think you'd be like, no, that's not the guy. No, I'm gonna go home.
Third guy from the left. So was this your guys' first time watching this movie?
Not at all.
No.
Yeah, no, I'd seen it before, but again, based on 1997, there's a solid chance I was not non-drunk, and so I don't remember much about it except for John Leguizamo as the clown, which we'll get into, I'm sure. And not liking it very much. I'm looking forward to seeing if I liked it any more this time around.
I know I saw it. I don't remember seeing it, but I definitely saw it. I was 17, so I don't know what I was doing at the time. Probably something like that, I would imagine.
Yeah, we were all either high, drunk, or some combination thereof, possibly with friends. This would have been a movie I wouldn't have taken a date to, so this would have been homeboys.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was in college at the time, so I have no idea when I saw it, but I definitely saw it in theaters at that time. Is one of those random movies you see on the weekends at a very shady movie theater by College Park.
College Park, Georgia?
No, Maryland.
Oh, Maryland. Oh, yeah, sorry. Boom, that is way off. I'm sorry. I don't even know how we got there. I apologize. Yeah,
Georgia. Anyway, not to offend our Georgia listeners. So, Fergal, do you have any little bit of comic book history for us? A little bit of lore?
I mean, 1992. So, you know, again, don't want to bore you with a ton of details because you should know who Spawn is by now. But it came out of Todd McFarlane's mind when he was 16. He created this book. It's actually, this character is considered one of the top 200 of all time. Longest running comic book, I believe, independent for sure. You know, it spawned so many setup characters. It spawned a toy company that's a multi-billion dollar company. It changed multiple industries, spawned entire lines. I think you mentioned, Lewis, the Spider-Man run. Like, there's countless lines. Those books of McFarlane's do not fetch less than several thousands of dollars. They are very well-known books. And, you know, and I think that's the biggest thing. You know, it's great stories. I mean, multiple characters. The Neil Gaiman thing, I think you mentioned earlier. You got Medieval Spawn, Gunslinger Spawn, Angela, who's now a Marvel, is now a sister of Thor. It's an interesting combination there.
So quick spoiler warning for you guys. If this is your first time joining us, just a heads up. We're about to discuss certain elements of the story that might be considered spoilers of this very 90s movie, so consider yourself warned. Lewis, you want to walk us through the plot of this movie?
Sure. Our story follows Al Simmons. He's a government assassin, and there's an elaborate plot between his boss and the devil to have Al killed. And then so that he would be would go to hell and become the new leader of the army of hell. So it's a very elaborate plot to get him into that point. And then there's some other things happen. There's a clown and
that's a dope ass clown. This is a dope ass clown.
So why don't we start with that dope ass clown, the Violator? So how do you guys feel about John Leguizamo's portrayal of the clown?
Well, we know how I feel. I think that a bad guy, you know, because this is such a dumb, the movie's premise had so many different holes in it. And it was, while they were trying to do an origin story, there were a lot of holes that could have pushed you out the movie. And the character, you know, you have, I mean, because Al Simmons is playing a completely very straight Spawn. So you needed something to offset that, and that was not Consigliere. Whatever that guy was certainly not the guy who was going to offset Spawn, but the Violator was a perfect foil to Spawn. I just think that, you know, the way he talked, and it matches the comics, and just the whole, he was with a bandit. He enjoyed it. As you said, Chris, he was a penis within a condom.
Yeah, well, it was weird. The Violator's weird. I mean, he made me feel uncomfortable the entire movie. And I guess that's good. And after rereading some of the Spawn in preparation for this, he did play the character as he was in the book. So, I mean, I can't knock him for his performance.
That was what I remembered before we watched it for this viewing now. For my original viewing was, I did not like John Leguizamo as the clown, but I also was not extremely familiar with Spawn at the time. I didn't know the clown character other than what he looked like, which he did look exactly like the toy in the comics. Like the makeup and everything for him actually looks really good. But I was just annoyed by him. But then watching it again this time, it's much less annoying. I think it does. I did read some Spawn in prep for this, and it does fit the comic feel, at least the early issues. I didn't read the whole run or anything, but the early issues. So I think he actually did a good job, but it's also, if you don't like John Leguizamo or if you don't like the character, I'm going to give you some bad news. He's in like 90% of this movie. So hope you like it.
He's the main villain and the comic relief at the same time, which is.
Yes. Which is double duty for anybody.
Yeah.
Yeah. He is in the majority of this movie. You're right, Jeremy. I think if you don't like the clown, you don't like clowns, you're not going to like this movie because he's in so much of it. And actually, he is pretty much the only thing I remember about this movie from my first time viewing. I remember a little bit of Spawn. But, you know, it's been 20-odd years. But he eats up every scene he's in.
That tells you the strength of the movie. If all of you guys remember that most of all, even more so than, say, Al Simmons, Michael Jai White, who at the time was still riding pretty high on a lot of different stuff, then that just tells you that's like the Penguin. It's like there's certain roles where you just go as, you know, the original Joker, Jack Nicholson. That changed the whole genre of the Joker.
Well, why don't we jump in the Spawn? How do you think Michael did?
He's Michael Jai White. I don't think he does too many things bad. I wouldn't want to fight him. He's pretty badass. I mean, he's actually so fast. He's got super fast kicks. But in this movie, I think he was good, not great, but he did exactly what he was supposed to bring Spawn to life.
I don't think there was a lot for him to work with. It was a pretty flat character. They didn't really go into it. You didn't really get to know him. You know what I mean? It was just flat. I don't know. I don't think it was his fault.
No, I don't think it's his fault. I think the script didn't help him, and it's an origin story, so there has to be like him learning what his abilities are, who he is, what his power is, you know, what his purpose is, and that is learned throughout the movie, but especially at the start, I think he's very flat. He comes across as that kind of stone-voiced Batman kind of feel to it, but without any of the background. Like, Batman has a purpose, he knows what he's doing. This is just like, am I here? What am I doing? And that's kind of the first half of the movie.
He turned down playing Jax in Mortal Kombat for this role.
This is a good choice. I would have taken
this. That would, yeah, this is definitely a good choice. This has become cult classic status in this movie.
I was watching an interview, and I have a quote for you from Michael, and it gives you a good sense of how he feels about this movie. And he said, "There is no footage of me ever saying that I liked Spawn. I have never said that I thought it was a good movie."
Well, you know, wow. At least he's honest. I'll give him that.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, that's why I think they're looking at Jamie Foxx for the new remake.
Well, we'll get in the remake in a little bit, but the next one guy I want to talk about is Jason Wynn, played by Martin Sheen. He is the other villain of the movie. How do you feel his portrayal was as a comic book villain?
I just didn't think he fit. I just didn't like him. I said I think over the top would be a good set of words. I think he kind of slightly over the top, almost non-believable in some ways.
I agree with that. There was one part where I thought was really funny. It was like, they're telling him that he's got to get that device put on his heart, or, you know, so when if he dies, he'll release the virus. And they're like, you got to do that. And he's like, oh, yeah, no problem. You're going to put a device on your heart? And he was just like, oh, yeah, let's do that. Like, he didn't even flinch on that. He's like, yeah, let's get that done.
What a good idea.
I just thought that was so silly.
Well, and he gets the advice from a guy who he knows works with demons. He's like, yeah, you know what? That is a good call. I'm going to do that. I think in general, he's very one-dimensional. There's no like, they don't try to make him human. He's just a bad guy. He's a Lex Luthor where it's just like, I've got a bad idea and I'm running with it. My goal is domination. It's nothing else. It's not like, well, I'm doing this because my uncle died. I'm very stuck. No, there's none of that. He's just like, well, yeah, what do I need to do to control the world and have everyone that doesn't, you know, want to follow me die a horrible death? And so that's what he's working with. Even his like when they at the start of the movie, he is, you know, he's the one who betrays Al Simmons and gets him killed. And he does it because this demon guy told him to do it because other stuff he wants. Like, well, I'll do this for you, but first you got to kill this guy. And he's like, why? He's like, why not? I'm like, OK. And he just does it. Like, there's no he's worked with him for years. There's nothing that's going to stop him from doing whatever he needs to do to succeed in his plan, which is clearly a bad plan, like an evil plan. So from that, it's in one way, it's good for a comic movie sometimes to have that kind of black and white, good, bad. And he's clearly bad, right? There's no good there. But because of that, he's also not that interesting. He's just like, yeah, I'm a bad guy, by the way. Like, yep, we know.
Right, yeah.
I agree. It's such a shame because it's Martin Sheen. And, you know, that was a big name to be gathered for that movie. So I think there was, and I'm sure he enjoyed it, but he, again, and I'm sure he didn't have much of a script to work with. But I think the really good ones, when they decide to dive in, that's why I like the John Leguizamo role. I can't even say his name now. Because when the really good ones, when they dive in, they just throw themselves all in, even though they don't have to. They could still literally phone it in.
Well, and in some ways, because John Leguizamo's the clown slash violator character is so over the top, it's kind of good that this character is just a straightforward, like, no, I'm bad, and I'm just going to do whatever it takes and fuck everybody else. I'm going to get my plan to go through. I'll backstab anybody, whatever it takes to get there. Right? He doesn't have all these funny lines. He doesn't have all this extra need to chew up the scenery to someone else is doing it for 90% of this movie.
Yeah, I really don't understand his plan at all. Not Martin Sheen's plan. His was just the role. But Jason's plan as an overall story arc, I don't understand what he was trying to accomplish. I mean, he dies, the world dies, basically, right? Mm-hmm. And is his goal, you said world domination. Did he actually say that at any point? I don't remember saying that.
He wanted to rule the world.
The consortium. Yes. He wants to run all. He wants all the countries in the world to report to him ultimately, who decide to follow him. And everybody else will not get the vaccine to the disease that he has harvested from the North Koreans at the start of the movie. He's going to release to the world, and if he does that, then everyone who takes the vaccine will then owe him forever, and he'll be in charge of everything. Like, that's his plan. What I think is less can like, I mean, it makes sense separately, but when you put it together, it doesn't make a lot of sense. So he's working with the Malbolgia, who's basically the devil, and Violator, who is also one of the devil's like lieutenants, henchmen, or whatever, and they're also working with Wynn to some level, but really their plan is trying to stab him in the back as well, because they want to kill everybody in the world so they become more of Spawn, or more of Malbolgia's army that Spawn would lead, which clearly Wynn doesn't know about, because why would you want to rule the world if all of a sudden there's also 1,000 demons that are coming out? So it's like, there's this back and forth. It's like, I'm not quite sure that they would ever work together, but it doesn't really matter because there's a giant clown for most of the movie that's taking all of your attention.
He didn't read him in. The problem was he didn't read him in. He didn't read him into the total plan. But I will tell you, here's my thought process. If the devil comes and asks you a plan, are you really, and it's one that involves getting a pacemaker, are you really going to go through with it? Do you think you're going to win in the end? But here is 2 points for anybody that can name the virus. What was the virus called?
Heat six or something?
Heat 8 or Heat 6 or something like that. It's Heat something or other.
All right, everybody's 16? Got one. There it is. Lewis, our guest, has taken it to the top. He actually paid attention in the movie. Thank you, my friend.
Oh, man.
You were close. We could have said anything. And we said Heat something. It was close.
If you didn't say that, I wouldn't have got it. I just piggybacked off your answer.
I think we've hinted at that this movie's pretty disjointed a little bit, but what scene stuck out to you guys?
The motorcycle scene. The scene where he's like, when he like's coming out and he's on the bike, and then all of a sudden he just does that thing where it's like that, where it's, you can see the capabilities of his cape and the necroplasm and just the idea that he can do these things. That's dope. I mean, come on, that was dope.
That was cool. I like the fight scene in the whatever it was, like the ballroom there where he like smashes through. That was kind of a classic sort of Batman sort of fight scene. I enjoyed that. And he had the little belt thing come out. That was fun.
Oh yeah, where the I forgot what her name is. Church, was her name Church or Priest or something like that, where she tries kicking him in the crotch and the belt comes out and blocks it.
Yeah, it bites her leg. She's like, ah.
Well, you guys mentioned the cape a little bit, but you notice there's not many scenes that the cape is actually in.
No, that was an expensive cape.
It was a very expensive cape. They couldn't get it right for the majority of the scenes, so that's what. And so they didn't. They tried putting it into a ton of different scenes, but no, it just never looked right.
It looked really good in the scene that Lewis mentioned where he jumps in through the glass and you see the cape coming down. That looked really good. Well, and at the end of the movie, it's like, you see Spawn in the middle and the cape is basically like taking over most of the screen when he's standing on top of the church or whatever. Like, that's a good pose. It's a good look. It looks like the comic book panels. The other scene I really liked, I mean, the ballroom fight scene was good, but also the fight, the first time he fights Violator, the clown character, once he becomes a demon, he becomes this giant demon, in the alleyways where Spawn fights him the first time. That's a very good fight scene. I really enjoyed that. It shows that Spawn is not quite sure on how to use all his powers, but also it makes Violator seem deadly. Before, it's like, he's this clown, and yeah, he does gross things, and he can't be killed because he's a demon, but he doesn't seem to be, like, scary. In that moment where he comes this giant, toothy, gray, thin, creepy monster, and then just tears him apart. So that's a great fight scene.
Yeah, they took that. That was nice from the comic. They took that sort of, they were leading up to that in the comic, that fight. Because you didn't know if that was the same guy, and then they kind of was like a page turn to reveal that, so I appreciated that.
Now, I feel like that's where they spent the majority of the CGI budget.
The ending was completely lost to they did not really spend a lot of money on CGI in the ending.
I think the CGI, so the Violator CGI for when he's the demon, even Spawn himself, I think looks pretty good. And all the scenes where they're on Earth or whatever, right? When they're in the real world, even like the scenes where they're Violator's driving this like trash truck thing and Spawn's supposed to be, you know, stopping him, chasing him on a motorcycle or whatever. Like those look good. They still look pretty good. I mean, they're a little wonky, but they're not terrible. Like I remember the CG looking awful and I was watching up to this one. I was like, Violator actually looks really good in these scenes. But to Fergal's point, towards the end, anytime they're supposed to be in hell, it looks horrific. It looks so, there's everything CG and it's too much and it's not good enough. So everything looks real bad. It looks like a bad 90s video game on Sega CD. It looks just like that.
Or like a music video. Jeremy,
I was going to roll a Sega or a Dreamcast out on you.
It was the music video, the age of all the music videos that were coming out.
Yeah.
Like the Black Hole Sun. It reminded me of Black Hole Sun.
Black Hole Sun looks like a masterpiece compared to the CG, though, they have in the end of this movie.
You know, the best part is Malbosia. His mouth doesn't move.
Oh, it's so bad.
It's just like, and like the voice is coming out.
A couple things on that, guys. First off, a third of the budget went to CGI. And the funny thing about it, too, they didn't finish the CGI until 2 weeks before it hit theaters. They were working up on this to the very last minute because it kept ballooning out of the cost. They started with a $20 million budget and ended up spending $40 million because of the CGI. The reason why his mouth doesn't move is because they were trying to get across to you that he's speaking through hell. I kid you not.
That is something you make up when you can't make it look good. You're like, well, it's because he's speaking through fire. So you would need to speak through fire.
Did he sound like the guy from Inspector Gadget, Dr. Claw?
Yeah, just a hand in a chair.
Yeah.
How did Spawn get the ability to kill every other Spawn, to hurt all the other Spawns? That was also somebody running out of money and saying, let's just draw green stuff. And that's how they're going to get out. Let's make a lot of green electricity.
Well, the original envisionment, or the original idea for Hell, which they did film a little bit, was it's just a dark room. So it'd be Spawn talking to himself in a black room. And by the end, they're like, yeah, that doesn't work so much. So that's why we needed a CGI plan. So the CGI was to solve the problem that came, which was originally just a bad idea. I'm not sure that fixed it.
No, that made it worse. Because again, up until that point, you do see Hell early on, but there's not that much going on. And it's not, they're not there as long. So it was better. But yeah, once Malbolgia shows up, once there's that hole towards the end, you see like 5,000 Spawns and all it just looked so bad.
Yes.
Miserable.
Yes. And then when he gets his head zipped off by the thing and he's like, can I get some tongue? Can I get some tongue? Can I get some? I'll be back!
So why don't we talk a little about the CGI? We've been sort of touching on it. I own the DVD for this, sadly. And on the top, on the movie, on the box itself, it says the special effects movie event of the year. Does the CGI live up to that title?
In some parts. I mean, I think if you're a fan of Spawn and you were going in, and there were obviously a lot of fans of Spawn. It's one of the top, you know, top comics ever sold for an independent at the time. I really think it actually is the top comic, if I'm not mistaken. Then, yeah, you got exactly what you were looking for. You got a representation of what was in the comic at that time out in public.
This is a bold claim to say in 1997 that this is the CGI of any year, when this is the same year that the Star Wars special editions came out. Which were also heavily, you know, enhanced with CGI, where you didn't even notice half the time. It was just stuff they added in the background. And at the time, that was incredible. So comparatively, this is not the CGI event of 1997.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that's a stretch. It's good salesmanship.
Yeah.
I was reading some facts about it. I think it was like they actually subcontracted 22 different special effects companies to make this thing happen. So maybe I think they're not looking at it as like movie event of the year as in it's amazing. It's just a big event. They had a bunch of people show up, hang out for a little bit. I think it was actually good CGI.
Now that's the whole world they look at. I actually when I have my physical store, well, I had several customers that were actually VFX creators for Marvel. And they had, you know, special put in T1, T4 lines, a massive NDAs that are like 400 pages, and they had to put out this data for 10 or 15 seconds of a VX scene.
But that's not 1997. Like in 1997, this was a lot of CGI. So I do agree. There's a lot. And again, when they're not in hell, I think it actually still looks really good. So I was impressed with some of the CGI in this movie. But when you're not impressed with it, it's very, very unimpressive.
Yeah, I think what stuck with me, I thought going back to watch this movie that the CGI was terrible for the entire thing, but it's not. And I think what made me think that was the devil.
Yes.
Like that lingered with me for 25 years.
Mal Boja, he was not frightening at all. He looked like he needed a dentist.
The original plan for him, too, was they were actually going to go with a puppet.
That would have been better because the drawing looks like a Jim Henson kind of Muppet thing.
Maybe like a Dark Crystal? I could work with that.
I think it would have been better.
Or the Guyver.
Oh, the Guyver. As long as J.J. Walker played Mal Boja, I think it would work out perfectly.
That's the tie-in we were all waiting for.
The crossover we've all needed in our life. This movie clocks at 96 minutes. How's the pacing for it?
Not bad. It actually moves along pretty quickly. Was this, at the time that this was made, and I don't have it in front of me, is this a Marvel or an independent movie? Like, I know they had a crazy director, Diop. But was this bankrolled by Marvel, or was this bankrolled by Image or Valiant at the time?
I don't remember seeing
it. It was not Marvel. It's New Line Cinema, okay. So it probably was not Marvel. But
no, okay, so it was New Line Cinema. You're right. It was, New Line was headlining on top of this. This may have been on the end of their days as New Line Cinema, because at one point, New Line was, if there was a horror movie, they're like Blumhouse of the 90s.
Yeah.
They did Ninja Turtles, too, didn't they?
Yes, they did.
The original Ninja Turtles, I think. Yep. So I think they were considered an independent, right? More or less.
They were a large independent studio. At the time, there weren't many of them. They were very consistent, too.
The smartest thing McFarlane ever did was not sell his rights. He kept all the rights. He just allowed them to use the story, but he kept all the rights. Because I think the Neil Gaiman fight taught him something pretty damn serious that you got to be careful about this, especially when it's this big.
Yeah, he was trying to pitch this around, he was actually looking for a lot of upfront money. But no one wanted to give them $40 million or $60 million to make it. So he decided to take $1, but he got to keep all the merchandising rights.
Mm-hmm. Well, that works smart. When you own the toy company.
Yep.
Exactly.
Smart. He's a smart dude. Definitely business-wise.
Yeah, not often. And I would also put him in the same category. I'll say it again, Rob Liefeld. At a certain point, you can... create that character. Because, I mean, there are guys like Alan Moore who should still be getting, all of the rights off Swamp Thing because all of the new movies coming out with that. Man, he's pretty much, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, I think he sold those things off or doesn't own his majority of them.
I didn't even have anything to begin with.
Yeah.
Like those DC things.
And he also hates working with people to make movies.
What, Alan Moore?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
What do you think about Todd McFarlane's performance in the movie?
So, I blinked through YouTube because I wasn't going to rent it today. So I pieced together the movie through YouTube. So which scene were you referencing?
He's like a homeless guy, isn't he?
Yeah. He bumps into him in the alleyway.
There was an action in that one. It didn't get on my YouTube when I was piecing together this movie.
Virgo, at this point, you didn't actually watch the whole movie.
I might. This is Todd McFarlane.
So, but back to the original question. Was the movie long enough? Did you want more, or was it too long as it was?
Nah, it was good enough.
Yeah, I mean, 90 minutes is pretty short. We've done some others that go on way too long, or that you think it's going to be too long, and it's not that long. But 90 minutes for this is good. There's definitely more background you could put in. We mentioned Cagliostro, who's kind of like, in this movie, he's like a previous, I don't know, he's not a spawn necessarily, but he worked for the devil or Mal Boja or somebody like 500 years ago. And so now he's kind of there to be Spawn's mentor and kind of guide him away from working for the devil and work for the forces of good. I guess it's a good evil fight. But I would have liked to see a little more of his background because, again, he just kind of comes out of nowhere. He says, like, oh, I used to do this 500 years ago, and now you will. What? Like, there's not a lot of background. But at the same time, did I need it? No, that's the only thing I think was missing. Everything else, I didn't need more of, you know, thank God there wasn't an hour and a half of Al Simmons pre-Spawn in this. It was just like, he starts out, he gets killed, he becomes Spawn. And I didn't need a ton of background on a lot of the other characters. Like, I liked knowing literally nothing about Violator when you first meet him. And then you learn more throughout the movie on him, but you don't need, well, where'd Violator come from? What's he used to be a clown? Like, none of that was in there. And I don't know if it was ever in the comics, because I haven't, again, read a lot of Spawn, just a little bit, but I liked just enough to know he's a demon. You don't need anything else, period. He's a demon. He seems to be on the same tier as Spawn, but not quite the same skill set. So he's not going to be the general. That was one of my concerns. I didn't understand quite why. So they're trying to get Spawn angry enough to kill Wynn, which will cause the pacemaker they put in to go off and kill everybody on Earth, or most
the
people.
Apocalypse. On Earth. Yep.
Why doesn't Violator just do it?
I don't understand. Rules. There's got to be rules or something. So what you're telling me, Jeremy, you didn't want a 20-minute backstory on the clown's work as a street performer in Memphis.
No, but I expect that. Like, if this would have been a current movie, or if this would have been like a series, let's say it's on HBO or whatever, is like a 12-part series, there would be one episode about nothing but this sad street performer clown that somehow becomes perverted and becomes the Violator, right? That's a guarantee. I'm okay without that. It would have been interesting, but I didn't need it, and I was kind of glad it wasn't there. A lot of these movies do try to fall too much on let's explain everything, and then you're like, well, this was a great origin for everybody, and at the end they, you know, get a pizza, and you don't see anything else that happens. So they don't have to do that. They actually run through the whole story. You see the start to finish of both Malbogio's plan to some level, although it's not over. The fight continues, right? But the battle's won, and then wins, you know, end for his plan. His plan ends. So the earthly immediate threat is resolved, but the good versus evil plot goes on, but the battle is won. I like that it was just long enough to have that. I was interested in seeing where else it goes, but I didn't feel like, now I got to see the sequel because I don't know what's going to happen next. Like, you've got a closure in this. You don't need any more.
No, I agree. They moved it along. They got right into it, and, you know, they had a couple of fight scenes, and that was it. They wrapped it up. You know, it was pretty, one, two, three.
Not too much, not too little.
There is a director's cut of this movie. Originally, the original cut of this movie was rated R, and they cut it down to qualify for a PG-13. Do you want to see the rated R version of this movie, the director's cut?
Do you have the director's cut?
I do not.
I was going to say, you had it on DVD. I assumed you had the director's cut. I mean, if the director's cut is increased violence, then I would say in this case, that's fine, because it's a very violent kind of character. That's okay with me. If it's, you know, do I need more scenes in hell? No. Do I need more story about the homeless kid he hangs out with? No. So if, depending what the director's cut is, I might want to see it. And if it is literally just cutting out fight scenes and violence or whatever for the sake of getting the rating, sure, I'd like to see what it was. But most of the time, you know, I didn't feel like after I was done watching this, I was like, I wish there was more of this, or the fights weren't good enough. I enjoyed the fights that were in there, aside from the very last fight, which is fine, but it was all CG in hell, and I was just glad it was over.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't need to see the director's cut. I'm good on it.
Probably not. But if it did leak into kind of like the prosthetics design, because the practical effects, I don't think we can underestimate those. Those were really good. There was a lot of good practical effects for what it was at the time. So, I mean, I'm really curious to see, again, how they remake this movie, because it's very much like, you know, Blade and other movies they've got kind of kicking around the tin can for a while. They're not going to make a stupid story. They know how important the character is. They're not going to screw with it.
Well, it's a tough character, because you gotta, if you're going to watch a movie, you gotta care about the character.
Yeah.
And he's a tough guy to care about. I don't know. I mean, they try to infuse a little bit like, I feel bad now that I've been an assassin for all these years. You know, now I feel bad. I don't know. I feel like, I don't connect with this guy, but, you know, that's the tough part. You got to pick the right actor, and it's got to have the right.
Well, keep in mind, Liam Neeson did it well.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
I'd say it's a lot like a Batman character, right? Like, after you learn the origins of Batman, you don't need him to do anything other than be there, and you're really watching it for the villains, right? You're watching it to see, how is he going to stop whatever they're doing? And some of the later Batman movies are, you know, 80% villain, 20% Batman. He's just there. And you're like, yep, he's going to stop the day because he's Batman. But you don't need a lot of the background for Batman. Instead, you're eating up watching, you know, the Riddler or whoever else being taken over most of the movie. And I think that's how you'd have to handle Spawn. And they kind of do that here by having Violator be so much of the focus of this. Spawn doesn't have to do more than just be there.
I thought 96 was a good number for it, just in general, because I did check my watch a couple times. because it feels a little disjointed for me. Now, the director's cut, just so you guys are aware, is an extra 2 minutes.
Oh.
Oh, man.
Who has that kind of time?
You hyped that up pretty strongly, my friend.
You could have told us that and stopped that whole conversation. Like, yeah, 2 minutes? Yeah, all right. Throw it in there.
I was curious where you guys were going to go with that.
Just full frontal spawn shots. That's it.
So, Jeremy, you sort of touched on it. This is an origin story, and I know you guys have had problems with origin stories in the past. Did this movie pull off the origin story?
Yes, I think it did, because you have a full conflict. You get to meet a real villain. You're not just watching Spawn fight homeless people for 2 hours, and then at the end he fights a much stronger homeless person. Like, the Violator is a great villain, and he's kind of a Spawn foil. He's in there. It's good. Much like the Joker for Batman, that first Batman movie. Yes, it's an origin story, but at the same time, it's a full contained story. It's got a villain you want to watch. This is very similar. So I think they do pull it off. That's been my problem specifically. And I, like, we did The Punisher. I thought that was fine, but as an origin story, it was like 60% dull until The Punisher shows up, right? So this doesn't have that problem.
I got to echo in with this thing on The Punisher. Again, I'm just going to say the whole run of Punishers, except for the Dolph Lundgren movie, are great. But at the end of the day, this movie, you know, again, I think you're right. You don't need a ton of Al Simmons, but you still need Al Simmons, and you got to do it right, man. I mean, he's hard to care about, but I think you got a minefield of really cool Spawn stories that you can do. Even the one that just blew across, although it'll never happen. I think it could happen animated with Batman and Spawn crossing over. That would be such a dope story. That just on the story face alone would be dope as shit.
This movie had a lot of, in pre-production, sort of who they're going for, the tap for these different roles. And I want to get your guys' take on them. The director, there were two other choices for director before they finally settled on Mark Dippus? Dippus,
whatever Dippy. His name was. Just Dippy. Go with Dippy.
The first one, his name is Alex Proyas. You may not know him, but he's the guy who directed Dark City. Could you see a Dark City version of Spawn?
Maybe. I'm
familiar with that movie.
Oh, go find it. It's good.
It's good. It's different, but it would work. But again, you're comparing it to a director that's not directed anything before this or since. So I don't know. He can't have done worse than this guy.
Well, the original director they were tapping for this, but he decided to turn down was Tim Burton.
Oh, God.
I'm glad it wasn't, because again, Tim Burton does a very specific thing, and I don't think Spawn fits in that, even though I have compared it to Batman and the first two Batman movies. First two 90s Batman movies, or 89, whatever, were Tim Burton. But even the second one became very Tim Burton, right? So it's like, I'm glad it wasn't, because I think it would end up being too close to Batman Returns.
That's right. I get it.
Yeah, I was thinking in my head, I was like, if he does, Tim Burton does this, how different could he make it from his, like, those Batman movies? It just seems like the guy's got a cape, and he's got a dark city, and
Batman with a red cape.
And all you gotta do is look at Superman with Nicolas Cage and be like, that's exactly how Spawn would be.
Now, one character we actually didn't touch on all is Terry Fitzgerald. We sort of touched on it. That's Spawn's best friend who goes off and marries his wife.
Yeah.
D.B. Sweeney.
Yep. So the original person cast for that was Ed Norton.
I read that.
I mean, that would have been fine. Because, again, that character in this movie in general, he's there, so you have the connection that, you know, Spawn gets mad his friend is now with his wife or whatever. And that he does have a plot point later in sort of. But he's not important to the story otherwise. You're not hanging out with him at all. He doesn't have any character growth. You could have been anybody. So Ed Norton would have been fine there. And I like Ed Norton, but I don't think it would have made a difference.
Agreed.
The Vindicator, Violator, whatever his name is, Jim Carrey.
No. John Leguizamo, the little guy with the guy with the exaggerated face. I think because he did the transvestite movie, that's what really put the whole face together for him.
I like that you were like, you know what, I don't want the guy with the exaggerated face. I mean, I do want the guy with the exaggerated face, so I'll use John Leguizamo as opposed to the guy who literally is known for his exaggerated face. But I do think I like John Leguizamo in this role, because it works. I think Jim Carrey, again, he would have been way too well known by 1997. It would end up being like the Riddler, where it's a lot of Jim Carrey on this character that might not match the comic anymore. Jim Carrey's Riddler is fine. I liked it when I saw it. That movie's not great, but the Riddler in the comics is a totally different beast than the version that Jim Carrey put out. So I think that would end up happening with Violator and the Clown.
For some reason, I can't see Jim Carrey doing that. I don't know. Even though the Violator made me feel weird, I think that John Leguizamo was the right guy.
That sounds like a lot of therapy. And I'm sure that, you know, honestly, my friend, I will sit here and I still get the heebie-jeebies thinking about Cemetery Man. They're just some movies that don't deserve a movie, and that was one of them.
I still love our discussion about Cemetery Man. Now, Spawn had many people they cast for it. I want to go through each one. You guys just tell me if you want to see that version of Spawn, or if you thought that version of Spawn might be better. And these are in no particular order. So first off, Wesley Snipes.
No.
You could do it.
I think it'd be fine. Yeah, it'd be fine.
Cuba Gooding Jr.
Yes!
See, that's a weird pick, but I only know him from, what was it, Boat Trip? So that's not the same guy. I mean, it's the same guy, but a different character.
Ed Radio.
Snoop Dogg.
No.
Of course.
No.
Of course.
Can you imagine? Can you imagine? I mean, there's not even, like, Snoop Dogg as a CIA assassin. No, it's not going to work. Perfect.
No. Well, you did see The Day Shift, didn't you? The movie with Jamie Foxx where they're going after vampires. Snoop Dogg is a vampire hunter in that movie.
He's Snoop Dogg as a vampire hunter in the movie. So it'd be Snoop Dogg as Spawn. That's not going to work.
I would like to see it.
Yeah, let me take it back. It would be amazing to see. Would it be good? No.
Next up is Denzel Washington.
Possibly.
He could, but I think it's wasting Denzel Washington.
And that is definitely wasting Denzel. And I think Denzel's smart enough, because I just saw a video today where Will Smith can't even talk about they turned down The Matrix.
And they chose Samuel Jackson.
No, he would have played a better Jason Wynn, though.
Yeah, I think he'd have been okay, Jason Wynn. Yeah. Even 97, he was still, I'm trying to think what he would have been around the same time to gauge age, but I think he'd be too old for this role, which seems wrong. Maybe I'm thinking of him now, but he always like seems older than he is.
He's 136 years old.
This was a Deep Blue Sea time period, I think, wasn't that?
Which I like that, but I don't think he would have been a good Spawn, but that's okay. But I do agree, it would have been a good win.
Ving Rhames.
No.
No, he's just too big.
It would have looked weird. Imagine how large he would have looked as Spawn. It'd be massive.
Okay, how about Tupac Shakur, guys?
Too skinny. See, Snoop could pull it off. Snoop could pull it off. Snoop Neither could of be them a skinny would. Spawn, he's but not too Tupac.
Tall. Too tall. I don't know.
It's Tupac. Like,
all right, LL Cool J.
You did this on purpose. Come on. Are we really going through the whole list of black people?
No. Yeah, one more left.
One more black person left. Good job, Chris. One more. There's one more left.
God bless America. This is a who's who of black people in 98. No, Will Smith should have stayed on Independence Day. And that's from the affirmed black person on the crew. There's a lot of black folks. I don't know how to say it, but
that's all I got for how many who they were thinking about for casting purposes.
No, I think they did a good job casting. Again, it's any weakness in the acting is not the fault of the actor. It is a pretty rough character to play, and it's not the best script. So
exactly, and so that's right there. This movie doesn't suffer from good talent. I mean, again, Michael Jai White is a badass martial artist. I actually wish we just saw more of that. But it does suffer from bad script writing.
So at the end of the day, guys, what did you love about this movie, and what could they have done better?
I like Violator, I like Spawn. I think those two guys are pretty awesome. And then everything else.
Like you said, the script could have been a lot better. A lot of corny lines, a lot of like 90s references that don't, like, no one's going to know what those even mean. You know, it's not like you can't be timeless. It's like they made it, it's like stuck in the 90s.
Yeah, well, it didn't help the music. The music threw it in the 90s for me. Like that whole soundtrack is literally every late 90s superhero movie is in this soundtrack works it. I liked the Violator more than I remembered. I actually think he's really good, like a good character in this. It looks really good, even when he's the big demon. In the real world, it looks good. Spawn's costume actually looks better than I thought. I don't know why I thought it looked... I remembered it not looking good, but then I watched it this time. I was like, it actually looks really good. I think it looks better than the current Venom costume. I think the current Venom costume looks pretty bad in the Venom movies, but I think this actually looks better than that. What I think they did... And again, this is a script issue because I've only read the first few Spawn comics, but the Spawn comics in the original comics, he can't remember like what's going on in his past. And he like sees things that remind him, like, who's this woman I'm thinking of in my head? Oh, he finds it's his wife when he sees like a locket or a ring or something. That wasn't in this. Instead, you know, Al Simmons wakes up as Spawn and tries to go find his family. And so there's this really awkward party scene. I think they could have done more with him learning who he was with flashbacks and make that little less awkward. But I mean, other than that, I think it actually, and the hell scenes, I know you mentioned that they were trying to get around that they filmed a dark room or were going to. I think I would much rather see a dark room. I think the hell scenes are what make this not as good as it could be. I think they, when you look at it now, the hell scenes are the weak point of this film.
Blame Diop.
I think the whole script needs a whole rewrite. I mean, there were some visuals that were pretty interesting for the 90s, but the actual script itself, that the plot makes no sense at the end of the day. It's all over the place. And that CGI of the devil or hell is just horrible.
Yeah, Malboja looks bad. It looks, it literally does look like an old video game. It's not good. Yeah.
And Lewis, as you said, it's very dated. This whole movie is very dated, from the soundtrack to some of the quips.
At one point, the clown, like, I don't remember the exact quote, but it's a tie to the girly man, pump you up, guys. He says a quote about that. I was like, Jesus. Yeah. Like, that was one that I was like, oh, boy.
I know that quote because I saw it in my YouTube clips I was watching.
Next episode, Fergal's just going to watch the trailer and talk about that. We're going to be good. We're set.
Depending on the movie. If it's Cemetery Man.
What is the Cemetery Man? I got to see this.
Oh, God, sweet Jesus.
It's had quite an effect on you.
You can listen to the episode that we talk about it or go see the movie or do both.
It's a horror movie. It's got some questionable parts.
Questionable is a good word.
You can leave
the only thing redeeming on that movie is boobies. And I promise you that if you find me on Facebook, you're like, this dude was right. Those tits are fabulous.
Is this an 80s movie?
Yeah. But I mean, as fabulous fake tits, those were up there in the top five.
Now, to be fair, that's the same thing Fergal said about the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles episode. So,
no, I mean, who had fabulous fake tits in that one?
All four turtles.
Fabulous. Fabulous.
Oh, they were fabulous. The costumes were fabulous. But I think you didn't understand how it was all coming together. These folks don't always appreciate the hard work that goes in the 80s movies. And I get it.
Fergal, you have actually sort of hinted at that there is actually talks of a reboot for this movie that's been talked for quite a long
years.
Time. And Jamie Foxx is being sort of thought of being for that role. Do you guys want to see that reboot, or should this thing just disappear into the dustpan of history?
No, reboot is necessary. You don't have the comics are flying up. It's one of the few resilient books in the marketplace. You know, McFarlane's signature has achieved a status pretty similar to Stan Lee's, right? So it on its own will drive a book up by a pretty significant margin. So, I mean, yes, a remake is good. Do I think Jamie Foxx is the guy? I don't know. I think there are a lot of very good African-American actors right now, like Pierre Johnson, the guy who's doing the Green Lantern. Idris Elba is another one. I think the guy who played in Hawkman is another one that could be really good at this. There's a lot of good actors that could do this. So I'm not sure Jamie Foxx can pull it off. I think that's why he did the action movie recently with Cameron Diaz. I think he's trying to prove that Rogaine shit's still working out for him. That whatever Viagra he's using to clear up all the brain power, he's making him work.
I want them to make a sequel to this, and I want it to be good so bad. I want it to be great. I don't know. I'm just rooting for that for some reason. I have something connected to my childhood. I want them to make a good Spawn movie, not two bad Spawn movies.
Yeah. Yeah, and it doesn't have to be a sequel. It could be a reboot. I don't need the same story, and I'm sure they would do a better job. But I would like to see this with current effects, and more interesting plots overall. This definitely has like a mid '90s comic book plot. You know, we've talked about Ghost Rider and some other ones, and they all have these like goofy, really silly plots. This is up there with that.
Yeah, I think it deserves a reboot, and let this version of it just disappear.
No.
Well, also, I mean, it's not a movie, but there are three seasons of an animated series that were on HBO. It's actually very well done. You can still find it. It's actually on YouTube for free. I'm sure it's probably not supposed to be, but it's easily found. So I would check that out as well. I think it doesn't follow the same plot as the comics for the most part. They all start out kind of the same, but it takes its own turn. But it's not bad at all. It's well worth, I think it's better than this movie. And I didn't hate this movie, so.
Guys, what is your actual rating of this movie?
I'm going to go with a nice, slightly upward thumb pointed right at the Violator's head with Al Simmons pointing as well with me, with his chains and his cape.
I got to give it a half thumb, but it's the Violator's hand held up with that piece of pizza with the maggots all over it, because that was pretty remarkable. But it's a half thumb. I mean, I liked it. It was enjoyable more than I thought it was. Is it something I'd say you have to rush out to find? No, probably not. And I would love to see them redo this.
Those are real maggots, by the way. He actually threw up after eating that stuff.
Oh, God, that's gross.
It seemed like he turned his back and like something weird was happening there. I'm gonna give it one thumb because I really think they tried really hard on this, and you know, it wasn't the greatest. It is stuck in the 90s, but I think they gave it a go, and they did put together a movie. You know, it had a beginning and end, and then it was one total package. So they did what they tried to do.
Boom! This guy. I like the thought process. I like where you're bringing it.
I'd give it like one failed chain up. You know the scene where Spawn tries to send those chains, and I sort of and they fall back down again. That's what I give this movie.
It's a good one.
It's okay, but it's a half failed attempts, chain, and it fails.
You need Viagra for that.
So, Lewis, where can people find you?
Okay, so people can find me. I have a website. It's lp-comics.com. I have some of my books there. I also, my Instagram, I post a lot. So it's Lewis, L-O-U-I-S, 10/22/1980. I have to change that, but I will one day. And so check me out. I have a lot of my artwork on there, and you can see all the different stores where I have my books. And I also just want to make a quick mention. I'm publishing a book. It's at the printers right now. I'll have that ready for spring. Survival Girl and Puppy number one. And then I also am working on another comic with a writer. His name is Kevin Michael Rowe. And we are working on a comic called Invasion on Center Street. And it's like a sci-fi horror yarn. It's going to be a lot of fun. And you can check him out at, what's his website here? I'm going to put his stuff in the show notes along with my other stuff.
On our website, there's a page for our guests where people should be able to find your links as well.
That's awesome. Thank you so much for that.
And Jeremy, where can people find you?
You can always find me every 2 weeks here, but also at Retrovania.net, where we have a podcast called Retrovaniacs. It comes out 4 times a month, along with some Twitch streams and videos.
Well, you can find me right here on Getting Your Movie Smashed. Otherwise, you can find me at Get Your Nerd On. You can find me on Instagram. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on TikTok. Weaving masterful stories, telling masterful stories, putting my 2 cents into everything. So come enjoy it. And oh, selling a few comic books here and there. A couple things, but only the coolest shit.
And for me, you can always find me at All Panel Creations. We're always over there building some piece of nerdy furniture. I want to thank you, our listeners, for spending some time with us today. And I have no idea about Spawn. I have no quip about it. But you want to send me a note about why I should have been smarter about what I could put at the end of this episode, send me a note over at movie-smash.com, and we'll see you in a couple weeks. Thank you again for listening, and I hope you enjoy the show. This has been Movie Smash with Chris Roberts, Jeremy Parmentier, and Fergal Amayo, produced by me, Chris Roberts, executive produced by Off Panel Creations, LLC. Movie clips provided by the respective studios. You can rate and review the show at Apple Podcasts and Spotify. You might even find your review read on a future episode. Got a question for us? Visit us at movie-smash.com and send us a note. It too can be read on a future episode. If you haven't already, please subscribe to Movie Smash wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Next episode, Fergal's just going to watch the trailer and talk about that. We're going to be good.